Welcome to Biohacking with Brittany. Thank you for joining me on another episode today. This is a place where I talk about wellness and health and everything that kind of goes in those categories. And I am back doing interviews this month, and I'm excited to bring you a ton of experts and diverse people in this space. And it's going to be, I have a ton of interviews booked for March. So I'm really excited to be able to bring you some new content and some expertise that's way beyond the things that I know. And today is none other than Angela Foster, and she definitely goes into that category of being an expert. We dive into women's health and biohacking and really get into the nitty-gritty of how it's so different for women and what we can really do about it. I got connected with Angela at the Women's Health Conference, which was an online event in September of last year. And I listened to her speak and I loved what she had to say. And she's quite a prominent figure, female figure in the biohacking space. So it was awesome to finally be able to sit down and do this recording with her. Her and I are very similar in terms of our philosophies and our outlook on life and health. And the way that she works with women is actually similar to what I'm building myself, but she kind of focuses on that next stage of life, kind of post fertility, pregnancy, baby, like kind of, I don't want to say any age, but maybe like after that phase of life. So she focuses a lot on perimenopause and menopause and how we can kind of be proactive and preventative about that. So it was very interesting to hear her take on that, what she recommends to people and what she recommends to women. And her view is very similar to something that I would do and I would take in my own journey down that path one day. When we were offline, she actually recommended this course to me from an online academy. I'm going to link it in the show notes and on my website for you. But there's an academy called the Health Sciences Academy, and it's based out of the UK. And she recommended I look at their fertility nutrition course. So I actually took a look and I enrolled in this program. And so it is a new course that I am doing. It is self-paced. You know, typically you do it in about 3 months if you devote a certain amount of time every week. And afterwards, you become an advanced fertility nutritional advisor. And this is something that I have really, really been looking for. I've been looking for something that is above and beyond just nutrition. So when I looked through the curriculum of it, it talks about lifestyle and toxins and male fertility. And it's not just how do we improve egg quality through nutrition, which is a lot of what I see online. So I'm very excited to be starting that. I've ordered my, you know, textbook from them and things like that. And so I'm going to be getting that off the ground very soon. And Angela has done a bunch of their courses. And so this is an academy. It's really cool. If you're interested in leveling up your education, they have like a foundational nutrition course, which I don't need to do because I'm already a nutritionist. And then they have, I think it's like 16 or 17 advanced nutrition professional diplomas, which is what I'm doing. And then they have two other things as well. But these 16 to 17 different professional diplomas have all sorts of topics. So there's things on detoxing and child health and baby health. And there's so many different ones. I don't even remember what they all are, like weight management and different diseases and all sorts of things. So if you're looking for something that's self-paced online from a reputable school or education platform, I would really, really look at them. And I'm surprised I didn't find them sooner. I don't know if it's because they're based out of the UK and I'm not, that they didn't come up in my search, but they have over 150,000 students. And my experience so far has been fantastic with them. They are, I can't even tell you how great my experience has been with them so far. So I used to work at an online nutrition school myself. I used to run the software and help with operations. And so I've seen the behind the scenes of how these online schools are run. And this one is phenomenal. The emails that I got that answered all of my questions before I had to even email in and ask, the amount of curriculum that they showed me before I enrolled, the access they gave me, that like, it's just so well thought out. And it's such a smooth process that you can tell that they've had thousands and thousands of students because of how smooth the process was. So that makes me trust them a lot. And all of their programs are research and science-based. They're very up-to-date as well. So they add in all the latest studies, and which I really value. So right now when I'm building my Baby Steps preconception and fertility course, this kind of goes hand in hand, because this course that I'm doing now is for, it's a professional diploma. So, you know, a couple isn't really going to necessarily enroll in it, but the course that I am creating is for consumers, is for a couple or a single person. And it is dedicated to improving your fertility odds in general through biohacking and optimizing your health. So I'm very excited about this, and I will keep you updated as I go through it. And again, I'll link it for you just so I can help other people get more education if you're looking into it. And speaking of baby steps, wow, we are so close to launching to the waitlist. I have some more content to write, and then we're wrapping up, and then it's going out, and those emails are going to go out, and I'm really excited about it. If you are somebody who wants to be proactive about your fertility journey, I really suggest you sign up for this waitlist. You get $100 off the course, and it is a very proactive, preventative way to go about it without having to look at IVF or being stressed about those types of things. And so whether you're trying right now or you're planning to try, this includes the course, and then it includes the protocol. The protocol is a 90-day protocol of all of the research I've done and recommendations to optimizing your health before you start trying to conceive. So there's, and that's for you and your partner if you do have a partner. You know, well, like I want to be inclusive of people who are doing like sperm donors and things like that. So that is coming out, and I'm very excited about it. And I will continuously be promoting it, adding to it. I'm going to add podcast episodes to it, videos to it, downloadable worksheets. There's going to be all sorts of things. There's a community aspect as well, so you can connect with other people who are going through the same journey as you. And I think that's also very important. So please join the waitlist and send it to people who you think need it. And last but not least, I do want to shout out my Ebb and Flow Cycle Guide. It is now on sale for the month of March. I'm doing a spring special, and you can save 34% off of it. So it's originally priced at $29 US, and now it's going to be $19. And I just launched that today. So this is a cycle syncing guide. It's a hormone balancing guide, and kind of teaches you the basics of understanding your menstrual cycle and your hormones and how you can regulate your cycle and get rid of the symptoms that so many of us deal with when we get our periods or ovulate or things like that. So there's over 30 recipes in there. There's seed cycling in there. And this is going to be a special that I'm doing for the month. So you can go and download that and buy that right now. It's available on my website. There's over 500 bought. It's got multiple, I don't know how many now, 5-star reviews. So definitely go check that out. If you're looking for something that's holistic and also talks about biohacking in terms of your menstrual cycle. So enjoy, and enjoy this podcast episode. Shout out to Lila Quantum Tech. I love their products. I just did a video about them last week. They create products that focus on reducing and neutralizing the EMF in your home. So I have their Infinity Block beside my bed, and this really just helps to neutralize the EMF that comes from the phone or the Wi-Fi routers or the other people in the apartment building. And there's a ton of research that they've done on it as well. And I love their products. I feel like they give me a peace of mind, so I don't have to worry about radiation and EMF as much impacting my health, impacting my husband's health, my dog, everybody. It really, really gives me a peace of mind. So I recommend you look into their products. If EMF is on your radar and it's something that you are kind of concerned about but don't know how to mitigate, Lila is one of the best companies that you can start with. Enjoy this episode with Angela. There are so many golden nuggets in this. I think you're going to love it. And if you have any questions, just send me a message on Instagram at biohackingbrittany. Welcome to Biohacking with Brittany. Thank you for tuning in this week. This episode is going to be a lot of fun. I have Angela Foster joining me. I am really excited about this. We have been trying to plan this episode for so long together, and she is a leading woman in the biohacking space. And those are kind of far and few between. So when I saw her, I saw you talking at the Women's Biohacking Conference in September. I knew, I was like, okay, I really want to get this woman and expert on my show. And so now we have finally made it happen. She is not only an award-winning nutritionist, health and performance coach, but she's also a speaker. And she is the visionary founder of the Female Biohacker Collective, which is a community that we are going to dive into today and talk all about. And she really just focuses on high performance for women, which I am so excited about. So Angela, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Brittany. And thank you for such a lovely intro. It has been a long time coming, right? Actually, it's so nice to be here with you today.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's one of the best things about like going to those conferences is actually meeting people who are very passionate about the same thing as you. And I don't think you and I would cross circles otherwise if it wasn't for like social media or those conferences, because we live on opposite sides of the world. So I'm super grateful for this. Yeah.
Awesome. Me too.
So I would love to kind of start with your personal journey and how you kind of went from being a partner in a large law firm to becoming a nutritionist and health and performance coach. Like what kind of happened there for that switch to happen?
Yeah, it was quite a journey, actually. So I was, as you saying, I was a corporate lawyer for many years. And then I kind of was working all hours, right? Weekends, pulling all-nighters, as you do in the world of corporate law, totally disrespecting most of the things that you and I both talk about in terms of sleep being the foundation, for example, and really good quality nutrition. I was kind of getting by as much as I could. I was always into fitness. And then I started to have a few hormonal issues. So I had some problems with PCOS and endometriosis. And then when I had surgery, it's because I wanted to have my children. And that was when it was my first sort of foray into health, when I was diagnosed with PCOS and told that there may be some fertility issues. And so at that point, I was really starting to research nutrition. I'd been prescribed metformin, which I know like is a big kind of like quite a big drug among the biohacking community, but I couldn't take it. Like literally taking that drug, just I couldn't keep any food down. So I started researching the link between PCOS and blood sugar management and trying to take control of my nutrition. And then after the surgery, I was told, you know, if you want to have kids, like the next 6 months is your best chance because the endometriosis and things can come back. And so I was going for partnership at the law firm at the same time. I was like, wow, I'm just going to go for the two goals together and see what happens. You know, maybe one of them will come in. And as it happened, I then made partner at 8 months pregnant. So both goals achieved in that short period. Yeah, which was just kind of crazy. And then I had my son. And then afterwards, my gynecologist was sort of the opinion, and we can talk about this if you want to, but at this stage, you know, take the contraceptive pill for 6 months and then have another go, like for another child, if you want to have another one quite close together because of all the gynecological problems. So I took his advice and did that. And by the time I was due to go back to work, I was now 3 months pregnant with my second child. So it was all, everything quite quick. And I didn't know that I never thought I would be someone that would struggle with postpartum depression, but I did. And it got successively worse. And then after my third child, I sort of had all my three kids within 4.5 years. I then, and you know, maybe part of that was postnatal depletion, I'm sure, but I had really bad postpartum depression, which was then like eventually diagnosed as major depressive disorder with bipolar episodes. And that was when I reached a real low point and I was trying to turn my mental health around, really had kind of created this prison in my own mind where I just wanted to turn the thoughts off. And I was only thinking about sort of ending my life because it was just through the pain of what was going on in my head. But I didn't want to leave my kids, you know, without a mom. I didn't want to leave my husband without a wife. So I just felt I was kind of trapped. And that's when they got flu and I caught it. And I ended up being hospitalized with double pneumonia. And it was very serious. And I was neutropenic. My white blood cell count was so low. And that's when I really took a look at my life and thought, you know, here I am in the hospital, away from my family. I was rushed in, couldn't tell them I wasn't going to be coming to get them from school. And it felt like my world was coming crashing down. But it's the moment of my life that I'm most grateful for, because at that moment, I remember looking at photos of my children after they'd left visiting me and thinking, you know, what the hell am I doing? I've got to get back on track. Like, I'm mentally, physically, spiritually broken at this point. I want to be there for them and see them grow up. And that's where I really started my health journey. And then everything's kind of grown from there and turned into a mission really just to help other women optimize their health for high performance so that they can really show up as the best version of themselves in their career and with their families. And so a bit of a long-winded answer, but essentially that's how I arrived here today.
Yeah, I love that. And thank you for sharing that. I think a lot of women can relate to that. And I'm curious if you have any type of recommendations for maybe women who are kind of in that zone right now. So I talk a lot about fertility and preconception and women's health as well. And I'm curious for women who maybe feel like they might have postpartum depression or postpartum depletion, like you said, like, what would be your advice now that you're out of that for someone who may be kind of in the middle of that right now?
Such a great question. I mean, I think there are a few things. So when I talk about postnatal depletion, I think, you know, postpartum for me was definitely partly a function of hormones. But then I think from a nutritional standpoint, it's definitely some areas that pregnancy depletes, particularly if, like me, you know, anyone listening is having multiple children, six, you know, quite close together. I had 3 kids, 4.5 years, 3 C-sections, 3 babies that had reflux. That takes its toll. And I think one of the things that we underestimate is the impact of omega-3, because we're building and, you know, 3D printing this tiny little human and building their brain and their eyes. And what happens is we deplete the nutrients that we have to facilitate that pregnancy, right? That successful pregnancy and give birth to this beautiful little child. And so I think restoring that. And for some women, they're very careful about what they're taking during pregnancy and possibly while they're breastfeeding. But then after that phase is over and they notice, you know, their hair starts to fall out and they're like, oh, you know, that's normal because I wasn't losing hair in pregnancy. Maybe that's just what I was losing. Yes, there's an element of that, but are you losing more? You know, is it that your levels, iron is another one, is it really low? And could you be taking that pregnancy vitamin actually to restore your nutrient sufficiency alongside really, really high quality nutrition to help you through? I think that's, and you know, what I'm seeing from research and things, that makes a big difference to women. I also think that one of the things I underestimated was the impact of lack of sleep on mental health at that time. I think we know a lot more about it now. But, you know, because I'd been working in corporate for years and surviving on little sleep, I thought, well, I can do this. And I didn't take naps during the day. You know, when I was up with my kids and obviously they slept really badly with reflux, I would then just kind of carry on the next day thinking I could get through it. And that has a big, big impact on mental health and just that circadian misalignment as well when you've got a baby that wants to feed at night when you naturally want to be asleep. So I think getting as much help as you can. Now, I'm not saying that's going to solve all the problems. You know, with my third child, I remember my doctor saying to me when I wanted to have a third, we need to get some serious help in here. And I did get a night nanny. And that in its own right is a huge decision because some women just don't feel comfortable giving over the nighttime. You know, you feel so connected when you do get up with your child. And it was something I struggled with. And I think all these things need to be taken into account so that you can find something, a solution that really helps for you. If you're lucky enough to have a partner who maybe with their job is still able to help a little bit more and give you some breaks. But I think taking as much recovery and looking after you needs to be priority number one in terms of when we're looking at physical and mental health.
Are you confused on how to balance your hormones and understand your cycle? Maybe regulate it, reduce the symptoms that you're dealing with, like PMS, cramping, pain, headaches, insomnia, things like that. I created an ebb and flow menstrual cycle guide that talks all about this, and it is now on sale for the first time in a very, very long time. You can get 34% off with my spring special that I am doing, and I think this is the highest percentage I've actually ever given off on the guide. Typically, it's $29, and now it is $19. And I really suggest you grab this before the end of March while you can, before the price goes back to normal. So this guide has over 30 different recipes that you can pull from that are all about how to optimize your hormones and sync your cycle. But it also has things like seed cycling in it and learning about the different nutrition and food for every phase of your cycle. There is a workout plan that shows you which workouts are best during which phase. There are lifestyle practices and biohacks, supplements, herbs, and botanicals, and even mental and emotional health recommendations made for each phase of the menstrual cycle. The recipes have calories, carbs, fat, protein, vitamins, and minerals all broken down for you so you can see exactly what you're eating and how it's going to impact your health. Again, I really suggest you grab this while you can during my spring special. It's linked on my website and in my show notes. You can save 34% and get that guide right now. I think this is foundational for every single woman to understand her menstrual cycle and her hormones, especially before fertility or anything like that even comes up, or maybe you're post that phase of life and now you're trying to regulate again. This is also a perfect guide for that. So that is my ebb and flow cycle guide, and I will link it in the show notes and on my website for you. I love that you mentioned that. I think it's easier said than done. Like most health advice, right? Like you hear it and you're like, oh, that sounds so nice. And then in reality, you're like, okay, maybe I don't have the bandwidth to do that. I think it is really difficult. I think, you know, especially when babies are on like a 3-hour cycle of, you know, feeding, pooping, napping, and then 3 hours that happens again. I have a friend who just had a baby last week. And so I've been kind of supporting her. And I also think there's something to be said about the accumulation of lack of sleep. So like you were saying, like the next day you just do it again, the next day you do it again. And it's like over time without the napping and without the support, it's like how many hours of sleep have you gotten this week in total? It's kind of alarming. So I think there is a lot to be said about being able to let go a bit and giving the responsibility to a partner or a night nanny if you can. I think that's really good advice. But I also just imagine how hard that would be for a new mom to be able to trust somebody and put herself before her baby. Like, I don't know, that just seems like a very hard place to get mentally, especially for someone who's just had their first child.
Exactly. And I think this is the thing we have to take account of is like, you know, how is that woman feeling? And is she going to feel better or worse? Because that was with my third child, I did it and I hated it. I ended up actually just saying, you know what, we're just going to close this contract out early and I'll pay you for the time that you were meant to do, because I wanted to connect with my child. And I think that's so individual, as you say. And I think, you know, the other thing is when we look back ancestrally, we probably grabbed our babies and just nestled up close to them and breastfed them in bed and fell asleep with them. All the advice now is that you shouldn't co-sleep, that there's a risk to the baby. And I think it's a scary place, right, for many women. They're trying to figure it out. They're trying to do the best thing. And they're often so sleep deprived that it is impacting their mental health. And so napping is definitely something, you know, when your baby is sleeping, if you can get that break at the very minimum, that makes sense. Now, any mum that's listening to this and has a toddler as well is going to be saying, yeah, but my toddler stopped their naps and now I can't. And that is difficult. And I think that's where, if it's within your budget or if there's a family member who can take a little bit of slack away from you, if you don't want to outsource anything at night, can you do that for a few hours during the day? Because at some point, just to look after you, that needs to be made back up. Also, you know, some babies sleep really well, some don't. It's so individual, all of this stuff.
Yeah, I love that. I think that's such good advice. Do you have any recommendations, or maybe you've worked with clients around birth particularly? I know there is so much to be said about birth these days, about how people are doing it versus home birth, hospital birth, you know, the cascade of interventions and all of these things. I'm curious kind of where you stand on that, or yeah, if you've even helped women kind of through that part of their lives.
Yeah, I haven't specifically kind of helped women who are at the stage of giving birth in terms of giving them advice. I think from my own experience, I wanted to have a natural delivery, and that was definitely the whole aim. I think for me, it turned out that I had what was called pelvic disproportion, where your internal sort of pelvis size is actually very small. And so there was only really one of my babies that could have been a possibility in terms of size. And I think that's still a very real risk, right? We know that many years ago, many women did die during childbirth. It still happens today, just less often. And I think, you know, what the kind of trouble I got into with my first child and why we had that emergency C-section, you know, things could have gone very badly wrong. And so it's a really difficult, because again, this comes down to, you know, making a decision that's right for you. I'm a huge fan of, you know, when people talk about home births, pools, and feeling relaxed and breathing, and using all these really holistic practices, because I think it's such an incredible connection with the baby. But I think for many women, that may also not be that simple, right? And also it depends on the size of her partner. Like, what's the size of that baby? How petite is she? I think there's so many things that I just really, from my perspective, want women to feel that, you know, the whole way through your parenting, this applies all the way through. Like, we're all just doing the best we can with what we have, and grant yourself some grace and know that whatever you're doing is right for you and your child, because every mom makes that decision from the best, you know, the place of best interest and with so much love. And I think that just honoring that and knowing that, you know, however it's going to unfold, you're doing the right thing, and that connection will be there when you hug that child, and there's so much oxytocin released. And I think sometimes women can feel a pressure that it needs to be a certain way, or they're not very good if they're not doing it right. And I just think we need to release women for that and understand that, you know, the way it happens for you is the right way ultimately.
Yeah, it's so true. I, again, like, my friend just gave birth last week. So I've, you know, and it wasn't what she wanted. Unfortunately, she had to get induced. She was 10 days post her date. And then there was kind of these issues that happened. We don't need to get into it. But it's interesting just like hearing about this, because I think she has a little bit of birth trauma now from that situation. And obviously, like, it's been a week and she hasn't had the ability to even think about working through that. But when we talk about like postpartum depression and the mental health aspect, and then we talk about birth, it's like, it's kind of like the same thing. Like, there's this mental health aspect really that takes a toll there of, I expected it to go like this, but then it went a different way. And now I kind of feel guilty or ashamed or sad or mad about it. And I just think that there's not a lot of talk about that. There's not a lot of dialogue of addressing, hey, what happened in the hospital? And are you okay mentally? And maybe the doctor didn't ask for your consent for something or something like that, right? Like, there's all of these things that can happen. And I really want to empower women to have more of these discussions, because I just feel like we kind of sweep it under the rug, but really it sits in the body and it manifests. And we just need a space to be like, yeah, my birth was actually really crappy, and let's talk about it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I totally agree. And I think women need more space to do that and to process what's happened. And I think you can't predict what's going to happen, right? And sometimes it is really, really tricky. I know that, you know, with my own experience, that C-section, it's always a risk when they do an emergency procedure that there's damage caused elsewhere. And it did cause damage in me, and it caused a problem with my bladder that meant I basically, it knocked the receptors, right? So I couldn't communicate. Like, my brain was not aware that my bladder was full. So that meant that I was retaining all this fluid. And so consequently, I was discharged ultimately with a catheter for a short period of time. That was just an all-time low. You know, I remember my husband having to help me change the bag and unscrew it for me to have a shower. And I've gone from this, you know, we were so young, this loving like relationship of having that. And there's a sexual relationship with your partner that then that birth experience sometimes crosses a boundary that you feel uncomfortable, and something like that can happen afterwards. And you just don't know how to make sense of it, right? Everything has changed just in a very short period of time. And now you're a new parent, you're sleep deprived, you're trying to recover from a birth, from surgery, potentially. I think as a whole, you know, the more we can support women through this process and just let them know that they can talk about it and that it's okay, the better. I totally agree with you.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it just plays into women's health in general. Like, women's health tends to be such a taboo topic still, whether it's birth and trauma from birth or postpartum or even menopause and what that feels like, or even like starting very early when you get your period for the first time. it's like this secret and you don't tell people and it's not celebrated. And I remember like talking to my mom about it and that was it, you know, like I didn't talk to my dad about it. And it was like this, it's just this like thing that's kind of hidden. And yeah, it's getting better, but it's still not at a point where we're accepting women's health to be at the same level as men's health. You know, I remember very typical, like in high school, getting my period, hiding my tampon in my hand when I had to go to the bathroom during class, like stuff like that. And I just wonder how far we've come from that. Like when I think about the new generation coming up now, I wonder how, you know, how much have they accepted in the women's health space? Like, is it still taboo? Or is it like everyone is kind of talking about, you know, this 15-year-old girl getting her period and now it's normal? Like, I don't know. Do you hear anything about that? Like when you work with your clients?
And yeah, and also I have a daughter. I don't think it's got a lot better. I interviewed actually, I think it's called the Women's Health Bible here in the UK, a group of women who were ex, like one of them was an Olympic rower. And she was saying just how they were going in to support women in schools here in the, girls in schools in the UK, and just how little support there is, right down to even things like girls play cricket, they're still in cricket whites. And just how it just takes one kind of accident that embarrasses them in front of everyone for them to never want to play cricket again. And it's like, why are we using, why have we got cricket whites for young girls? Do you know what I mean? Even things like that, I think it's still really, really difficult. I think, unfortunately, it hasn't yet moved on enough.
Yeah, I really agree with that. I think it's getting better, but I definitely don't think it's where it could be, unfortunately. And again, I think it's the same thing with menopause as well. Like the way that I hear my mom or other people have talked about it, it just seems like this, almost like this thing that people kind of, I don't want to say make fun of, but kind of make fun of. When a woman is experiencing hot flashes, like I feel like she kind of jokes about it sometimes. And it just seems, again, like this isn't super important. I don't want to talk about this publicly, but like it is important. And we do want to hear about your experience. And so how can we empower women? And I know a big part of like what you do is your Female Biohacker Collective. So I'd love for you to kind of talk about that and how you empower women through your collective.
Yeah, sure. I'd love to. So, I mean, the collective I started really as a membership for women who, some of them had done my programs and they wanted to have a community after the program. And other women, it was like, they were listening to the podcast. They were really enjoying it. And they were kind of following me on social and wanted a hub, a community to connect with. But also, I don't know about you, Brittany, but one of the things I'm seeing is people are quite scared at the moment. There's a lot of, on social media, there's a lot of content that's created that's quite frightening in a way and makes you feel like, I've no idea now what to eat. I don't even know what's healthy anymore. Do you know what I mean? I think a lot of women feel confused. What should I be eating? How should I be training? What do I need to be aware of as a woman? What, you know, why are my hormones screwed up? Like, how can I get those back on track? And so I created the collective really as a place where we've done the research for you and we deliver monthly content every month on new things that you can start implementing. So it's kind of like, here's the science. Here's what the studies show. This is what we're seeing. And this is how it's playing out. This is how you can start taking steps to optimize your health and your performance and your longevity. And then we have Q&A calls really to help women, and it's to support them. And then they have a lovely community at the same time. So that's really why I created it as a kind of hub for women who are looking for more content, but they wanted to know it was from a trusted source and to take away some of that confusion.
Yeah, I love that. I totally agree. I think there's a lot of fear-based content out there and very much like, if you don't do this, then this will happen and avoid these mistakes by doing this. And I get it. It's like marketing and it's kind of like how you grab attention, but it still doesn't feel like a safe space for people to share openly anymore, let alone a safe space for women. Absolutely. So I think that's a really smart idea. I'm curious, in this Female Biohacker Collective, what are kind of the common health issues that you're seeing come up or concerns? Like, what are the discussions about?
A lot of the discussions are around, so we have quite a few women who are in, they're between sort of late 30s and late 40s, most of them, some women kind of crossing into their 50s, but a lot of them, and I see in that particular, you know, there's seasons in life, as you know, but that particular kind of decade, sort of 38 to 48, what we see is a lot of women who are struggling with the competing demands of raising a family in combination with, you know, they've elevated their career to a level now where they've got a lot more responsibility. And in some cases, they have aging care parents on top that they're trying to cope with. And it's just so many things coming at the same time. And then they realize I'm perimenopausal, my hormones are all over the place. And all of the fitness stuff that I was doing before and the nutrition just doesn't seem to work. Why am I gaining weight? Why am I so tired? Why have I got this anxiety that I don't even know where it came from? Do you know what I mean? It wasn't there before. Now suddenly I feel like an anxious person. And what is going on? And we realize that our hormones just make up who we are, you know, happy hormones, happy you. It sounds cheesy, but it's true. And I think that those are the kind of things I'm seeing is how can I get my metabolic health back on track? And, you know, the people that come to me don't tend to be way off track. They're more trying to address things before they get out of control and really optimize for their health over the longer term and stay energized because they know that teetering on the edge of burnout isn't helpful for them. You know, as a mom, you can't go down. If you're in a leadership position at work, it's not great. And so really it's about helping them do that. And then what we have is the membership is really there for people who want to get more information and learn. And then if they want to go deeper, we've created a blueprint called Biosyncing, which we've now trademarked, which really has three pillars, which is about syncing with your female physiology and then syncing with your bioindividuality. So part of that is understanding what seasons you are in life. And we do a lot with biofeedback and HRV in that program, which I'm happy to talk about if it's helpful for your audience. And then the third pillar is syncing with your most empowered future self so that you're constantly elevating yourself and stepping into that woman that you're always becoming effectively. So that's sort of for people who want to go deeper, we take them through this blueprint for high performance.
If you're like me, you are thinking about your energy field, you're thinking about radiation, EMF, and 5G around you. And honestly, you're kind of worried about it as well. What if I told you you could just get a product, put it in your house, set it and forget it, and know that you're actually reducing the amount of EMF and radiation around you? That's where Lila Quantum Tech comes in. Their products actually neutralize EMF, even in electric cars. And this is so, so important because we are so bombarded with the amount of EMF and radiation in today's society. So their key product that I love is their Infinity Block. And it has actually been proven to increase ATP production, which is the energy in our cells, by 20 to 29%. So this really, really does matter. Lila Quantum Tech has over 59 studies and they actually also have another 6 in progress. They are randomized, placebo-controlled, and double-blind studies proving the great benefits of their products. I really suggest you get this Infinity Block. If you can get something that you can put in your house and say, hey, this is actually helping to neutralize how much EMF me and my family are exposed to, it just makes sense. Why would you not want some sort of safety measure like that that you can count on? They also have a Heal capsule, which is like a little capsule that you can bring with you anywhere you go. And it does this same thing, obviously, to a smaller degree and smaller circumference around you. So I like to wear this when I go on planes because there's so much radiation on planes and EMF. And I like to wear it just in general when I travel. Their products have been proven to optimize HRV and improve your blood and obviously ATP production, like I said. So that's what I would do. I would really recommend looking into how you can manage your quantum energy field better because this is such a key aspect of optimizing your health. You can get a significant discount through the link on my website and also in the show notes, and that will help you be able to get this at a better price. So again, that's Lila Quantum Tech. I have the Infinity Block. It's in my bedroom. I actually sleep right beside it. And then I also have their Heal capsule on a necklace that I take with me everywhere I go. And these are the two that I would recommend. I think this is a great starting pack for you and provides substantial coverage in order to neutralize the EMF that's around you and optimize your health. I love that. I just think it's so smart. I actually did a podcast on perimenopause and menopause a while ago, and I had an expert on, and she was explaining it. And this is kind of, you know, before my time. I'm not in that phase of life yet. And what I learned a lot from that podcast episode was how proactive you can be prior to getting into perimenopause, and how much that can make a difference of your experience during perimenopause and menopause. And which is a very, very biohacker approach of like, let's be preventative, let's be proactive. And, you know, at the age of, I don't know what the ages are, like 35, I'm not sure. This is what you can do now for the next 5 to 10 years, so that when you do go through that, it's actually going to be a lot easier for you. And I don't see a lot of people talking about that or really hearing about that. And is that kind of what you kind of help people with as well, as like explaining that?
Yeah, exactly. And that's just huge what you said there, because the healthier you are as you approach that phase, the easier it's going to be. And, you know, helping to like really minimize symptoms, but also really maximize the potential for you when you've made that transition the other side. And interestingly, that's a lot of what the work that I do with in my programs, but also in large corporations at the moment, is the thing I'm being most asked to speak on, is to come in and talk about. It's always sleep, stress, burnout, and women's hormones. And how can we optimize our hormones to really empower women to have that success at work and sync with their female physiology in a way that feels intuitive, but also just like lends them so much more energy, right? And I think that's the key thing. And we know that energy often goes down during that period, and that has its own ramifications, you know? So just that reduction in energy that women often are feeling in that stage of life contributes to them moving less, which contributes to a slower metabolism. You know, there's so many little things that come into this. And so really, like, that energy optimization is its core. And part of that is understanding stress. And that's where, when we in biosyncing, we actually use a medical grade ECG device that we give to program members, where they can take their HRV readings day and night, and it will just sit on them, and they can see it all in an app. It gets uploaded into my practitioner portal, and we can see what activities are in sync with you, or, you know, you're in resonance with, and are actually building capacity, and you're in the green, and which ones are much more sympathetically driven. And there's not necessarily wrong with sympathetic drive, right? Stress is good. Stress gives us growth. It's just that it needs to be balanced with enough recovery, and particularly at that stage of life. So then we can start to see, how are your behaviors? Because when you look at something like an Oura Whoop, and I love them. But when you wake up in the morning, sometimes you look at it and you're like, I really don't understand. Like, why is my recovery so poor? What happened? Whereas when you start using an ECG during the day, you can actually see a heart rate tracker that's got electrodes is on that chest area. You can see, now I understand, because now I can see that actually what's happening in my day is informing my nights. And that's why I'm not building as much capacity. And then we can help to correct that with lifestyle changes, so that actually you feel high in energy.
I love that. I think that's so smart. And I love that you have this program that you just walk women through. Like, it's just so, seems like it's a very hands-on approach, which is likely needed. And I just don't see it enough, to be honest. So I will definitely link that in the show notes so people can take a look at that for you and become more aware of their options. I want to just understand a bit more about the idea of being proactive about menopause and things that you're saying. So what age would you say that, you know, like the typical woman goes through menopause? When does perimenopause start? And when would be the optimal time to be like, okay, let me be proactive so that I can have an easier time in the future? Like, what would be your ideal recommendation for the women listening?
Such great questions. So I think the average age is 51, but the age that you, like the listener, goes through menopause is really largely genetically determined by the age that your mom, and a lot of people don't know when their mom went through menopause. So I think asking your mother is a really good thing to begin with. When you're approaching it, and I think this is something that isn't being taught enough as well, is that we keep sort of lumping women in together and talking about, you know, the fact that perimenopause might begin at 35 or 38. And what I've seen is women actually can become quite nervous around that, because for some women, they haven't started their family yet, or they haven't completed their family. And so they don't want to be thinking about perimenopause because what they're thinking about is fertility. But what I would say is whichever stage you're at, the principles remain the same. The more you can, it's a bit like we were talking postpartum, the more you can prioritize you. And it doesn't have to be in terms of time. I think we too often fall into the trap of like, I don't have time for that because I'm so busy, right? Really what we're looking at, and this is what we teach in biosyncing, is let's look more at energy allocation than at time. And so where are you putting energy into things at the moment and how is that serving you? So you might be, if you've got a young family, for example, a lot of that energy is going into relationships. If you're building a career, a lot of that energy is going into building your career at this point in time. If you are a fan of exercise, you've got energy going there. So then how much is going in this fourth quadrant, which is really the recovery bucket? And are any of the other areas a form of recovery in themselves? So entrepreneurs, for example, who are in a flow state, they're very mission driven. We might see them when we look at heart rate variability, building capacity because they're loving what they're doing. So that some of that work can come almost into recovery. But if you're doing a lot of fitness, for example, how much are you putting in to the recovery bucket? How much stretching are you doing? How much like sauna or even like taking a nap? How much are you doing to facilitate that overall energy? And I think whichever stage you're at, starting to approach this and looking at the activities you're doing of like, which are bringing me energy and which are depleting so that I can make sure, almost like a bank balance, right, that the numbers are stacking up for me and I can maintain this over the long term. And so nourishing your body in the right way with the right nutrition is applicable at all times. And, you know, nourishing, there's certain foods that at certain times of the menstrual cycle we want to focus on. People get hung up on, then I must eat those foods at that week. Not necessarily. You just need to have them in at any time. Do you know what I mean? They're going to do their job just fine if you're eating them regularly. I don't think you have to be that specific. It gets too complex. But understanding that we need to give you the building blocks for your hormones to be as optimized that they can be at any stage. We need to make sure we're keeping inflammation low. We need to start prioritizing as you move towards perimenopause, more protein, right? Because we start to develop anabolic resistance. So now it's having an impact on metabolism. And that means we're less able to control our blood glucose. We're losing muscle mass unless we're really resistance training and having a higher protein diet. And that's contributing to us to getting that weight gain. There's a redistribution of body fat. So all these things can be addressed. And I think it's more like a, you know, just slowly changing up what you're doing as you move through and looking at, okay, do I still have a regular cycle or is it now becoming a little bit erratic? Like what stage am I at? And then applying what's appropriate to that stage so that you're kind of moving through it with much more flow and grace.
I love that. Yeah. The idea of like holistic self-care so that you can show up better for your job and for your family, I just think is so applicable for most women. Again, I think it's harder to do and stick to the routine. But I think if you can get into that headspace of, let me take time for myself and let me make these conscious decisions that are going to nourish me inside and out so that I can be a better mom and I can be a better employee or if you run your own business, whatever it is, I really think that is so, so important. And I'm glad that narrative in general has become more popular. And it's, again, it's just very empowering for women. I'm curious how you know, obviously you're a biohacker and you're in the biohacking space. A big part of biohacking is like technology and gadgets. And I'm curious, like, how do you integrate this aspect for the biohacking practices that you do with your collective or your programs? And how do they like embrace womanhood, but also are like super helpful to like, you know, make you healthier?
Yeah, such a great question. So I think for me, I do quite a bit of tracking, right? Because I find it makes difference. I like to look at the data, but I don't hang everything on it. I think checking in with yourself and seeing how you feel is equally important. And then what I will do is, you know, obviously I try to do as many of the things that are either free or natural from an ancestral perspective. So if we look at light, for example, that's something that commonly gets biohacked. You know, I try to get outside every day around sunrise to see the sunrise. And then I will go out during the middle of the day for a walk, gets a bit of an energy boost, gets the blood flow. And also it's a great time for boosting things like dopamine and serotonin and elevating your mood and your energy. In the evening, I restrict the light, right? So we have you know, amber like bulbs and things in our lights at home in the evening. But then I'll also do red light therapy. And I think, for example, in winter, we are really, I don't know if it's true. I think it's probably the same way you are, Brittany, is it? Where like in winter, we only have daylight sort of December time and January from about 8 o'clock in the morning until 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So our light hours are really restricted. Is that the same for where you are?
Yeah, 100%. Canada is quite dark in the winter.
Yeah, so it's kind of like depressing. And we're recording this on the 1st of March. So fortunately, we're kind of starting to come in spring. But during that period, that's where I do dial in things like red light therapy. I have an infrared sauna. I'm using those things so much more than I am in summer to really help to revitalize energy. You know, taking vitamin D in some kind of oral spray or something like that to boost you through those winter months. Also really important, and that's important for hormonal health as well. So I tend to, like, the biohacking practices, I guess, for me are as seasonal as much as anything else. You know, in the winter, for example, like I have a grounding mat where I'm standing here. In summer, I'll try and work outside barefoot as much as I can. So it just becomes, I guess, more biohacking in the winter and more natural ancestral practices for me in summer.
I love that. That's such a cool way to look at it. And I think, yeah, I think we kind of naturally move towards that as well of, yeah, what makes sense with how much daylight that we have, the energy that we have. I would argue that I get more sleep in the winter than I do in the summer. I think I'm up later at night. You know, it's a light out at the most daylight we get. I think it's light until 10 p.m. here. And so it's hard for me to go to sleep at 8:39 when the sun is still out. And it used to bug me, to be honest. Like, I used to be like, okay, I have to stick to this routine. But then I was like, no, I'm actually going to be more seasonal about this. And it's okay if I get less sleep in the summer and I sleep more in the winter. I think that's a very natural thing as long as I'm feeling good. And now I just kind of embrace that. And I'll get up at 5 in the morning in the summer and go for a walk outside. Whereas in the winter, that doesn't happen.
No, that's exactly the same.
Yeah, it's so much harder when it's like pitch black at 5 a.m. and you're like, no, I'm just going to sleep for another 2 hours. So I think there is a bit of grace that you can give yourself in terms of how do you incorporate these different habits and technology and things like that. I was setting my goals for this year a couple of months ago. And something that I'm kind of thinking about this for this year is this idea of social community. I saw this research, I forget when or where, but it basically like said that there's been research that actually shows that having more of a community and social engagement and social circle actually makes you healthier. And there's like, they've been able to link that in different ways now. Whereas before I didn't really see that or value that as much, but then it's like, I'm such a biohacker. Like someone says, oh, this is going to make you healthier. And now I'm like taking it seriously. And so once I kind of realized that, like, oh yes, having this sense of community is actually important for an individual's health. Then now I've been thinking, okay, how do I create this in-person community and also online community? So I'm curious for you, like, what role do you think that community has in an individual's health? And do you think it's different for women potentially?
I think it has a huge role. I think you're right. And I think that's obviously what the research is saying. And when we look at the blue zones, for example, one of the biggest things that, you know, the thread that ties them all together, where we have these centenarians and super centenarians, is that sense of community from kind of children right through to grandparents, and also friendships and relationships. They take time to eat, you know, they're not just rushing around having lunch on the go and things like that. So I think community makes a huge difference. I think that what the online space has done is to help people across the world connect with each other, which I just think is such a beautiful thing, because previously you were really looking to see people in your demographic, which actually is quite hard because there may not be people that are that local to you that, for example, are really interested in biohacking, which is still a relatively new phenomena. So I think that's really opened things up like very nicely for people to have friendships and then go on retreats and things like that and connect in person. I think in COVID, we all learned that, you know, online isn't enough. We really miss that human contact. And I think it's so important. And I think that we, you know, that sense of touch and just that in-person experience is also really important. But I think a combination of the two just seems to work really well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, during COVID, it was really isolating for most people. And when we came out of COVID, I remember how long it took me to get used to seeing people again and prioritizing that. And I was like, wow, like, I don't know. It was weird. I thought I would jump back right into like social engagements and friends and things like that. And I really didn't. And I was like, oh, I need to prioritize this and make this something that I do on the weekends. But I do agree with you. I think there is a beautiful combination of an online community that specializes or focuses on whatever you're into. So if it's female biohacking, for sure. And then there is something to be said about a friend group that, or family that is in person. And I think as well, some of the research I remember was looking at why women typically live longer than men. And part of what, you know, some of the people hypothesize is that it is because women have more of this friendship, girlfriends, community, where they have the ability to actually share about their experiences and their trauma and their hardship, whereas men kind of don't necessarily have that as much. So even if you look at it from a longevity standpoint, there's enough reason there for you to go and meet a friend for coffee and kind of keep up those friendships.
100%. And you know what's really interesting? I was interviewing Dr. Andrew Steele yesterday, who wrote the book Ageless. And he and I were talking around like how interesting it is that women continue their lifespan significantly beyond their ability to have children, right? Once they've transitioned through menopause. And the only other species that we're aware of that does this are killer whales. And they also live in communities and packs. And so the theory that's put forward is that we have so much to offer in terms of like passing down knowledge, giving love, being there for, you know, families and friends and things. Because otherwise, why did nature allow us to continue that lifespan for so long after we could no longer help with evolution? We were there like more to support. However, it would be highly risky when you take something like childbirth for a woman whose immune function and things, for example, after 60, 65 started to go down, you know, for her to have a child at that point. And so that again would just reconfirm that sense of community and the importance of it in particular to women.
I love that. Yeah, that just shows like how important women are really in these social structures that we have. And I think that's really fascinating as well. I'm curious about you and your, you know, Female Biohacker Collective and your programs. And what do you have next coming up for this year? Do you have any retreats or anything exciting that you're doing that you want to share about?
Do you know, it's funny that you ask that, because people keep asking me, can we have a retreat? Can we have a retreat? And it's kind of there, but I haven't yet got around to it. I think at the moment, what we're doing is we are going to be like, we're doing some sort of relaunch with the collective. We're always trying to improve it, make it better for people, but we're also rolling out our biosyncing blueprint more. So we'll be opening that back up to more people. It's a relatively new program that we have taken women through and just had such great results with it in terms of them elevating their careers, their health, and their relationships at the same time. And so that's really there. And I think what would be next for me is to encapsulate everything that I teach there and everything we've learned from those beautiful women that have been through it into a book so that people can access this more easily.
Cool. I love that. That's a great idea. Are you going to any biohacking conferences this year?
Yes, I am. I'm not traveling loads at the moment. I was last year, and I'm kind of at that stage with my family where I'm trying to figure out like, is it quite working? Is it right? Yeah. And I wasn't traveling until my youngest went to secondary school, which she's just done. But it was still kind of a hard juggle. So I think at the moment, I don't know if you're coming to London, Brittany, for the Health Optimization Summit. I'm going to be there in June. This has got so big, this event. It's bigger than, I think, Dave Asprey's event. It's huge. Wow. They're expecting so many people this year. I don't know if you, are you planning to come to London?
No, I can't go this year, but I would love to go next year. Yeah.
That would be awesome. It'd be lovely to see you. So I'm going there. I'm going out to Germany on a German biohacking event next month in April. I'm doing another one in London in May, which is all about the brain and burnout. So a few things, but I do plan. I keep saying, I'm thinking to myself, I must come out to North America and go to some of the events there.
Yeah, Absolutely. Yeah, that's really cool. And then, and whenever you do, you know, have your retreat, we'll definitely have you back on the podcast, because I would love to hear about the planning of that and how that goes. And I think it would be so powerful to have a group of, a small group of women in the same place for a week and just seeing the transformation and discussions. And a retreat is something that I've thought about for a long time as well, maybe next year. But yeah, there's just something so powerful about creating these opportunities for women. And I think it's, I think more and more of them are coming. So, but I get it, you know, with a book potentially on the way, I'm sure, and a family, I'm sure you have your hands full. So I understand. So if people want to sign up for your collective or your programs or work with you, where can they go and how can they do that?
Yeah, sure. Thank you. So if they want to, if they're interested in the collective, then go to femalebiohacker.com. You'll find everything there. To connect with me, I'm most active on Instagram, Angela S. Foster, or my podcast, High Performance Health. With biosyncing, we kind of like open and close it at various times. So if you go to my website, you can kind of sign up to get in touch with us there. And then we also, if your listeners just want to kind of get a snapshot of where their health is right now, we can help you to do that. So we have a protocol that we use called SHIFT, which stands for How Do You Shift Into Optimal Health, which is sleep, hormones, insights, fueling your body and mind, and training your body and mind. And you can get a snapshot on where you are on every element of SHIFT by taking our biohacking quiz. And then we will send you a free personalized report and offer you a call to go through it. And you can find that at yourtotalhealthcheck.com.
Awesome. I want to do that. I want to know what my scores are and what my advice is. I think that's a great idea. I will link that in the show notes and on my website so everybody can find you easily. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. This was awesome. I feel like I just have so much in common with you, and it was just lovely to chat and spend some time together.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed it, and I totally agree. Thank you, Brittany.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Biohacking with Brittany. If you're interested in finding the show notes or the sponsors for this episode, you can do so on my website, which is biohackingbrittany.com. Remember to follow me on Instagram, where I'm most active. My handle is at biohackingbrittany. And if you're interested in working together and you want to email me directly, you can do that. My email is info@biohackingbrittany.com. And I look forward to hearing from you and having you tune in next week.